Welcome into the Sports Objective right here. I'm glad to have you as always. Very excited. We've got a big show. We've got the Houston preview and the second half hour. Pirates taking a big contest tomorrow night. Man, that's going to be rough. Number five, Houston coming to Greenville. We'll be talking to that. Sam Raz. We'll talk to him soon in the second half hour. But first, Bubba, very excited to have a good friend of mine. I can't believe we've been friends now. It's been a decade. That's time is flying.
Absolutely. I'm very excited to welcome David Glenn back to the program. DG, how are you?
I am doing great, Bubba and Dave. It's good to be with you guys again.
Very excited to have you on. I told you that there's so many topics. We might as well play the DG show. You cover, when you did your show, so many topics in so little time. But where do you want to start? There's so many great things that we could talk about, that topics we've heard today. Certainly, one of the things that we were talking about with EA Sports, for gamers out there, you did not hear, EA Sports announced they're bringing back the good thing about the game going away. It's kind of like a Dave, when they have a Thunderbird or one of the, you know, the classic cars, and they take it off the line, and then everybody's like, oh my God, I missed that game. And now they're bringing it back. They didn't announce when they're going to bring it back, but EA Sports bringing back the NCAA football game. What's your take on that?
Well, the first thing that came to my mind, Dave, as a guy who practiced law for 17 years and is getting into some legal stuff again at this stage of life, is that EA Sports did not say that right out of the gate, you will be able to have identifiable players on those identifiable universities. In other words, EA Sports could reboot a college football video game where, of course, they can negotiate so that Clemson or Carolina or NC State or whomever wants to be a part of the game. And, you know, they can negotiate those deals and get to use logos and uniform colors and stuff like that. But to be able to call up Trevor Lawrence as the Clemson quarterback or Sam Howell as UNC's star quarterback next year or any individual player – well, that ties right in to what is still unresolved between the NCAA and college athletes. What third-party money are they going to be allowed to take under a system that's supposed to be in place by the end of the year 2021? I mean, we're knocking on the door of a new approach to amateurism in college sports. So EA Sports can reboot a video game without those deals with individual athletes, but I don't think most fans would view it as nearly as much fun as if you can actually call up your favorite team with recognizable players who are wearing their numbers with their names on the back. And the only way all of that comes together is if the video game manufacturers know what the new rules are and the student athletes know what the new rules are. And that's all part of this name, image, likeness debate that won't have a resolution until later this year. And a lot of folks are wondering, you know, how much is the clock ticking here? Is the United States Congress going to step in and help the NCAA make these new rules? Is the NCAA vote that they keep kicking the can down the road finally going to take place at some point this spring? What's this new world going to look like? Nobody is for sure. So I think there's a big difference in today's announcement whether it turns out to be just a video game or whether it turns out to be the video game most people want to see, which is, you know, when you play Madden NFL, you get to see Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes and those guys. It's not like some generic members of the Buccaneers and the Chiefs are running around out there. So that's a big fork in the road that this announcement by EA Sports did not resolve.
Well, that's one of the questions I had. You and I are older than Bubba and Kyle. And I remember you brought back memories of the Atari Real Sports Football, where they're like little dots running around. Yeah. It's not going to be that generic, but it will be more like that. Then that would be awful to bring the game back and not have any kind of players.
Yeah, it'll be colorful and it'll be advanced technology. It really just boils down to whether you want generic guys in maybe numbers recognized, and you kind of know who that's supposed to be, but, you know, without their faces and without their names on the jerseys. And, you know, if I'm EA Sports, I want to strike those deals. under these new rules, the NCAA has not made clear, and they haven't even adopted the new rules, but they're not sure how they're going to handle video games. They said that publicly this past fall. Well, now that EA Sports is back in the game, as the saying goes, the NCAA has an even more complicated task ahead of it. And your guess is as good as mine as to exactly where it's going to end up going.
One question I had for you as far as legally is concerned, would it make sense to this is one question I have for you as far as the amateurism piece of it. Is it a way that you could say for the guys, hey, what we're going to do is every single game we sell, you get a piece of it, and then when you leave college, you get that money? Or is it, can they get it right off the gate, out of the gate?
Well, all that's going to be negotiated, whether it's a video game or other things. I believe the intent is that whereas in the past, Dave, if you were a star athlete in college and you wanted to run the Dave Richmond Summer Baseball Camp, there's no way you could do that because you would be benefiting specifically from your talent in your sport where you're claiming to be an amateur. Well, in this new world, you would be able to do that.
Wow.
And you would be able to take that money for whether it's your baseball camp or some memorabilia dealer wants you to show up and sign autographs or sign paraphernalia. In the past, you would not be allowed to take that money in the moment. In these new rules, you would be allowed to take it because you're essentially, you know, marketing yourself. And even though it's in your sport, you know, the NCAA new world is not going to be the NCAA paying players. Anyone envisioning the university paying their student athletes, that's not what is on the table. What is on the table is some of those examples that I just gave you, where if you were the star athlete and DG's tractor company wanted to put you up on the billboard to help me sell more tractors, I'm allowed to pay you as an endorser. And there's all sorts of debates, like you would not be allowed to wear the logo of your school on that billboard, but everybody would know it's you, and I think you can help me sell tractors, so you're allowed to take my endorsement money. But that's all third-party money. So you have to think in terms of if an athlete wanted to make money off of teaching athletic lessons, you know, as in the camp example, personal appearances, autograph signings, if you wanted your own clothing line, as a college athlete, you can't do it under the current rules. This new setup would allow you to do that, and they're not making you wait for the money. This third-party money, again, the rules aren't in place yet, but my understanding is you're allowed to take that money in the moment. You don't have to wait till you graduate. There are restrictions, remember. You're not allowed to represent like a gambling company or an alcohol company or a tobacco company, and there's other restrictions. Boosters are still not allowed to induce you to attend their school by promising you, you know, you'll be on the billboard for X thousands of dollars if you sign with my university. That is still going to be against NCAA rules. And these are just some of the, you know, other details that they're going to have to debate out in these coming months, really, because some states have laws that are going to take effect this summer. And if the NCAA or Congress don't come up with federal laws that cover the whole country, guess what? We could have 50 different states with 50 different sets of rules or what college athletes are allowed to take and what they're not allowed to take. And that just is kind of the wild, wild west that nobody wants to see.
No question. It's a crazy time, but certainly with, say, if Holton Ahlers for East Carolina, he wants to do a deal with a car dealership, he'll be allowed to do it, but not with East Carolina stuff on, but he'll be in plain clothes and he obviously can say his name. This is Holton Ahlers, right?
Yeah. I mean, yep. And the university has to stay out of the equation. The university is not striking these deals on behalf of their athlete. The athlete and his representatives have to find these deals themselves or use third parties to find these deals. So it's an unusual setup. We all know why the universities don't want to pay players themselves. There's a lot of reasons. Some of them just as obvious as the money factor, but others, you know, you don't want to give the appearance of being more professional because you're treated legally in different ways. If athletes start looking more and more like employees and less like students, So the NCAA has a lot of reasons for not wanting to go too far down these roads. But this third-party money, I believe, is about to become a reality. And the NCAA knows that, you know, the debate in the public forum, once any young person who has the ability to market himself or herself, a huge majority of Americans, you know, want them to be able to financially benefit from that third-party money. And since it's coming from a third party, it's a little bit easier to digest because it's not coming out of the pocket of the athletic department.
One question, now we're getting ready to talk college basketball, so this will be a nice segue, at least I won't attempt to. You take Zion Williamson, you take a kid like that that you know that's going to be make some mega bucks. He goes to Duke. Could Nike actually go ahead and give him a contract as far as a shoe contract? He's doing commercials. He's got his own sneaker line when he's playing the one-and-done year at Duke. I mean, could that happen under the new rules?
It could, but ... They're debating, and you can imagine this is going to be one of the big debates. Some of this other stuff that I mentioned is a lot less complicated. When it comes to shoe and apparel deals, the university already has a deal. So if you, young Zion Williamson, wanted to be represented by a different shoe or apparel company than the one your university has a deal with, I can promise you the colleges are not voting for that version of these new rules, because they don't want one of their treasure chests invaded by the individual player. Now, is there room for those athletes to get something if it is the same sewer apparel company that the university represents? Maybe, but then the NCAA is concerned about, well, if you come to this school, we're a Nike school, or we're an Adidas school, or we're an Under Armour school, you know, we'll make sure you get this or that. And then that's back to, it becomes a recruiting inducement, which is against the rules. So my guess is, just like there are going to be rules against representing an alcohol company or a gambling company or a tobacco company, they might extend it one step further and say, you're not allowed to be in violation of anything that your university is already representing. And again, I don't think they'll create a loophole where it's okay if you do it just if it's Nike, just because you're at a Nike school. I think they're going to avoid that road entirely.
David, for those deals that are acceptable, do you think there'll be any type of limitations? Because obviously you take, like Dave mentioned, back when Zion was playing, or, you know, player X, or, you know, whoever that high profile athlete is. Obviously there are tons of products out there that would like to have those individuals, you know, speaking up on behalf of their product. And so do you think there'll be any kind of limitations?
Well, you mean in terms of the amount of money or on the categories like gambling and alcohol and, you know, pornography and stuff like that?
I'm talking more as far as, you know, just the amounts of money and the number of deals. Is it going to be capped at X amount of money, or how do you see that?
Yeah, I think they're going to avoid putting a dollar cap on it, because I don't know if y'all remember, at one point many years ago, the NCAA actually had a good intention to create more opportunities for up-and-coming coaches, including minority coaches, but they didn't want to spend a lot of money on it. So they created something called a restricted earnings position. So you could create this new position. It was going to benefit a lot of young coaches, including a lot of young minority coaches. But once they put a cap limit on this new assistant coaching position, they got sued on antitrust legal grounds, and they lost, and they lost big. So putting a money cap on something is really dangerous from a legal perspective. What they can do is say, look, these things have to be market value, right? Like, just like anything else, you know, Zion Williamson got into some complicated trouble. Some of those lawsuits, I believe, are still going on, where, you know, if a shoe company wants to pay magically, you know, the mom or dad of a prep All-American athlete some consultant fee, and the consultant fee doesn't look anything like what other consultants make. Well, it's not a market value. It becomes just a joke and a fraud. And you can tell that people are simply trying to funnel money and buy players rather than paying somebody fair market value for their consulting fees. Same thing is going to apply here. If you own the car dealership and you were going to pay me as a media member to represent you, and I get $10,000, but magically, you know, you offer the athlete $500,000. Well, the evidence is going to suggest that you're buying that player to play for your school more than you're really just hiring him as a spokesperson. So they're afraid of cash limits for those legal reasons, but they are allowed to put in that fair market value restriction, which it's not a perfect rule, but it helps them differentiate between somebody who's trying to recruit illegally and break NCAA rules and someone who's just trying to pay somebody a fair amount for the right to use them as an endorsement, an endorser, or a spokesperson.
One of the big topics this week is being your ACC guy. Unbelievable record that's being broken this week. I can't believe that I'm bringing it up to you. You have to go all the way back to 1960, where Duke nor North Carolina ranked. It was the Eisenhower administration. My dad and mom were teenagers the last time that happened.
Crazy.
How does that happen?
Whew. That's a whopper of a question, Dave, and it's a great question. I mean, I rarely get questions that involve anything in the ACC that occurred before I was born. But that was way before I was born, in 1960. I've even interviewed athletes from that era, and it is just – it's an amazing tribute to Duke and Carolina. And they are multi-time national champions, and they've had Hall of Fame coaches, including Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski, and more All-Americans and future NBA players than we can count. It is unbelievably difficult for any single program to be in the top 25 that consistently. So when you're looking at either side of a rivalry to go back, what is that, 60-plus years since the last time they're facing each other, unranked versus unranked, I think the bottom line is, you know, the combination of talent and experience is just not what it has been at both schools. And when you get to the point where you're often asking true freshmen to be among your better players, and then what happens is not all prep All-Americans are ready to dominate the way Tyler Hansbrough was at UNC a long time ago as a freshman, or Zion Williamson at Duke as a freshman, or even Jahlil Okafor a few years ago at Duke as a freshman. Many prep All-Americans take a little while to get that good, and they might be that good by their sophomore or junior year. But if you just look at point guard, Jeremy Roach at Duke was a prep All-American and has not been a good college basketball player so far. Caleb Love at Carolina, true freshman point guard, prep All-American, was a horrendous college basketball player for his first few weeks at Carolina. Caleb Love has gotten better at what at UNC is the most important position on the court. And guess what? The Tar Heels have gotten better with him because they already had plenty of quality big guys, right? Garrison Brooks and Dayron Sharpe and Armando Bacot. If you're poor and young at the guard position, you're going to be exploited in major college basketball. Duke was using Jeremy Roach and DJ Stewart, two true freshmen, very talented, prep All-Americans, not quite ready to be great yet. Carolina was using Caleb Love and others at guard. Good someday? Yes, you're already seeing flashes of it. Ready to be good right away? No. So they've both gone through massive growing pains, Duke even more than Carolina. I still think the Tar Heels have surged and are headed back toward the top 25. They're moving in that direction. They're better now. Duke is in as dangerous a place as I've seen them since 1995, which is the last time they missed the NCAA tournament. Now, I believe they're going to make it, but they've got work to do between now and Selection Sunday to make it. So it's a strange feeling for me as someone who's covered the ACC since 1987 and been there in person at dozens and dozens and dozens of Duke-Carolina games at the Smith Center or at Cameron Indoor Stadium. But when you look at the talent level, I think they're going to both end up in the big dance. Jalen Johnson, the freshman at Duke, missed a month, but is getting better now that he's healthy. DJ Stewart is getting better. There's enough other talent, Matthew Hurt at Duke, Baycott and those big guys at Carolina. When you add Hall of Fame coaches to that level of talent, I think it's going to rise, but it might not rise all the way to the top. Teams like UVA and Florida State are the trendsetters in the ACC right now in basketball. And Duke and Carolina may be in that unfamiliar position of maybe making the NCAA tournament, but not being among the favorites from the ACC.
David, you mentioned the Seminoles and then obviously UVA. You expect them to be there, but how about Virginia Tech, the job that Mike Young's done there? We saw him do it at Wofford, and now he's doing it in Blacksburg. The Hokies are 13-3 and just beat UVA.
Absolutely incredible. Absolutely an incredible story, because Virginia Tech does not have a deep basketball tradition. So at a school like that, with all due respect, it's even harder to turn things around quickly. Now, Buzz Williams, who left for Texas A&M, Buzz Williams was probably the best basketball coach in Virginia Tech history. So he didn't leave the cupboard entirely bare. But you said it well. Mike Young knows what he's doing and proved it at Wofford. And in fact, one of his best players, a big man named Keve Aluma, he was a Wofford player who followed Mike Young to Virginia Tech. Sat out last year very quietly, so nobody really knew about him. Well, guess what? He's a potential All-ACC candidate. And whereas the Hokies had a lot of good guards last year, but just nothing in the post, Keve Aluma is this 6'9", 235-pound guy for the post. So he filled the biggest need that the Hokies had. And if you add the good coaching to that, and they already had plenty of guards, man, they can really light it up from three-point range with guys like Jalen Cohn and Hunter Couture and others. You add all of that together, and to me, they're the surprise story of the ACC this year. I thought they'd be good, but if we all did our ACC power rankings, the Hokies would be somewhere in that top four. No matter what order you put them in, the Hokies would be up there. So they are an unbelievable success story. And I think Mike Young is at the center of that success and deserves an awful lot of credit.
DG, one of the things, speaking of the ACC and the NCAA tournaments, one of the things you and I were talking about pre-show that's crazy is the very fact that there are teams that may opt out of the conference tournament. Do you really see that happening?
I don't think it will, but I know coaches are talking about it. And I know that this happened within the last few years. It didn't get a lot of publicity because it was not in one of the highest profile sports. But Florida State happens to have a really prominent women's soccer program. And they essentially turned the ACC soccer tournament into just a mockery of itself. They did not give a good faith effort at the ACC tournament, because they were focused on the NCAA tournament. And there was a big debate. Well, isn't that their right to focus on the bigger prize? But then the ACC is saying, well, if you violate the integrity of our conference tournaments, what are our sponsors going to think about that? What are our TV partners going to think about that? What are our fans going to think about that? If you just say, well, it's only the ACC tournament. Florida State got fined for doing that in women's soccer. And the only reason I bring it up is, well, that's going to be the hammer that it's actually a new commissioner now. John Swofford just retired. So it's Jim Phillips, the new ACC commissioner, that may inherit a tricky situation. I think it'll be handled mostly behind the scenes. But what they're going to say at the conference level is, guys, we get paid a lot of money by our TV partners to broadcast these conference tournaments. And if you're just going to say, well, we don't want to risk A, anybody getting hurt there, but B, there's a very real worry that if you went to Greensboro for the ACC tournament, or pick a team, pick a league anywhere else in the country, what if your guys get COVID at your conference tournament and that prevents you from going to the NCAA tournament? Nobody wants that. So it reminds me of college football players opting out of bowl games if they feel like they've already kind of guaranteed themselves the $1 million NFL draft contract. If you've already gained your bigger prize, why risk your knees or your health with the bowl game? I know these conversations are taking place, but I think most conferences are going to be able to pressure their schools so that everybody shows up. And, of course, any team that's trying to make the NCAA tournament, if you're not automatically with a resume that's going to get a bid on Selection Sunday, you still have a pretty big incentive to go to your conference tournament and try to win it. It's only those top teams that may have more of an interesting decision to make.
And we're joined now by Kyle Barber. Kyle, did you have a question?
No, just now getting in, enjoying hearing the conversation. Sorry, guys, that I was late to the podcast tonight. Had prior commitments. DG, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Kyle. Good to have you with us, man.
You got to do some – DG says you have to do some up-downs after the show. So, you know, we'll need you for an extra 10 or 15 minutes after practice.
Wow. Now, Dave, you know Kyle prefers pencil rolls.
Okay, I do prefer pencil rolls. That is absolutely correct, Bubba. If I'm going to be punished, I'll take the pencil roll over the up-down.
All right. DG, as far as one of the concerns I wanted to ask with the roundtable we're talking now, the fact of one thing that I'm skeptical about with the NCAA, speaking of the basketball tournament, is the bubble. I just am worried about seeing all the Florida State missing three road games coming up, and all these the Pirates have had a real struggle because of locally at home in Greenville because of COVID and all the problems we've had, stoppages, starts, stop starts. I'm just worried about how that's going to play out when you have a situation where great that you're going to have in Indianapolis, a great basketball city, the home NCAA, where they can pull it off. I think that's great, but I just think there's too many teams not to have a whole bunch of problems as far as the start and stops of the games. Like, this tournament could last 2 or 3 months.
It's going to be scary. And how about this? I mean, just imagine the tricky nature of this. If the four of us got to create the rules, what rule would we create? If Team A and Team B are supposed to meet, let's just say, in the Sweet 16 on a given Thursday or Friday, and one of them has one positive test, but after contact tracing, that means six players are unavailable. Do you force them to play shorthanded on Thursday or Friday with their season on the line? Or do you somehow push the schedule so that they have a chance to get through X number of days where if there's enough negative tests, you know, they're back in action. I don't have perfect answers to that. If the four of us put all of our semi-large brains together, no matter what rules we came up with, I promise you, they're not going to all like them. So there is the TV partner aspect where you got to get it done in a reasonable time frame, but there's also the fairness aspect where you don't want Team A advancing just because Team B didn't have enough players. And then the team A gets to go to the Elite Eight without, you know, and at that point you're going to be on a long break. You're going to have one coach saying, oh, we're at a disadvantage because we didn't have a game on Thursday. You're going to have the other coach saying, oh, we're at a disadvantage because those guys got a free pass, a bye in the round of 16. It would just be chaotic. I do know that they have – it's not airtight bubble rules, but they are going to be very restrictive in Indianapolis. And you're going to be stuck on your one level of one hotel for a lot of time. And that doesn't mean there can be no problems. But I think it is going to be a more controlled environment than, say, what you see at these conference tournaments. So I think more coaches are worried about getting to Indianapolis in the competitive sense, right, just being good enough to be invited, but also getting through the rest of the regular season and the conference tournament with no COVID complications. And I guess one other piece of good news is technology has evolved to the point that, A, we know who was close to whom for contract tracing purposes, like little digital chips in people's, you know, anklets and wristbands. It's incredible how they can monitor such things. And B, results, positive or negative test results, come back a lot more quickly than they did even a few months ago. So you can sort of shorten the time frame to get guys eligible, even if there is a positive test somewhere. So we're not going to dodge all of those bullets, but they're going to have to create rules on the front end that they're going to just have to bite the bullet and apply those rules when something bad inevitably happens.
Do you think, DG, with creating the rules, that they'll allot? If we're in the Sweet 16 and Team A can't go because of COVID, you think there'll be an alternative schedule with so many days if they can go by this time? I mean, they're going to have to do it beforehand. They can't wait till it happens.
Right.
They're going to have to be a schedule made. Or do you think
May Madness?
Yeah.
Or do you think it'll just be they forfeit the game? I mean, I'm wondering how they're going to do that.
I'm wondering myself, and I don't have a great answer. And this is one of those where, you know, there's going to be some people arguing for certainty. They're going to say, listen, if Thursday is here and you can't go, you're done. And others are going to be arguing for fairness, right? And that's going to be the collision. The fairness argument is going to go, let's give these teams as many days as we can possibly give them to get a game in. But, of course, that's pushing back the Elite Eight game, which is pushing back the Final Four game. Because it's basketball, you do have, in this imaginary world, you do have a little wiggle room. Remember, in football, you can't just ask a team to turn around and play again 3 days later. It doesn't work that way physically. It's not ideal in basketball, but given that we've all enjoyed, you know, many decades of March Madness, where it's essentially Thursday, Saturday you play, or Friday, Sunday you play, theoretically, you could be asked to go, you know, if you couldn't play Thursday, hey, push that back to Saturday.
That's not going to work, DG. It's not going to work because you're not going to, as we're talking about this, I realize it. If you're tested positive on Thursday, you're still going to be out on Saturday. It's not going to matter.
It depends how early you tested positive. That's true. If you tested positive late the previous week, you might be out Thursday but back by Saturday. So it is complicated.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
I think once you're there, once you get into the tournament, it's like, all right, if you're in the round of, let's say you're there and now you've tested positive, we're in the Sweet 16, and now you tested positive, you know, that's going to be a mess. If it's early on, if you happen to test positive when you first get there, or maybe you tested positive right before you got there, what you say is right. You can push it back a few days, but once you're there and the tournament's in play, if you test positive, I really don't know how they're going to do anything. But once you get beyond the first round, if you test positive, you just have to forfeit that game. If not, we're going to be delaying everything by weeks.
I agree. And the other thing they are doing is maximizing the social distancing among players. Like, I don't know if you guys caught this during college football season, but rather than taking a single bus or X number of buses to a game or from the airport to a game, they were quadrupling the number of buses so they could spread players out, you know, in a larger space, so that if one person was positive, you could still show that rather than being stuck, you know, on an airplane, you might be within 6 feet of 9 different guys. Whereas if you spread everybody out on planes and on buses, the contact tracing doesn't catch as many in the web. Now, there's going to be no sympathy for anybody who loses one player or even a star player. That's going to be tough. Keep moving. Play on Thursday. And I think what these schools are going to try to do, you know, with the hotel set up, with the buses, with the transportation and the lodging, they're going to try to minimize the domino effect. In other words, if somebody is positive, it's not going to take out a whole slew of players. It might just take out that one player, but even that, again, is you know, easier said than done. You can restrict where people sit at meals and on buses and in planes and hotel. Everybody gets their hotel room to themselves instead of sharing. But at some point, you are within 6 feet of each other, you know, during practice and otherwise. So it's all of this is easier said than done.
You're right within the 6 feet. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, you can't play with masks, but I mean, maybe they can practice with masks. I don't know how the contact tracing rule applies. I think it's isn't it within 6 feet for 15 minutes without a mask?
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. Maybe they could do a lot of mask wearing even more so than they already are doing during that time. Maybe that would help. I don't know. Another question I've had, and I've asked several people, and nobody can give me an answer, and if it's been asked to you already, I apologize. Do you have any idea if there's going to be an NIT?
I do not know the answer to that. I would guess they're going to try to do it. There's going to be no shortage of candidates who want to play. But no, I have not heard, you know, whether they're going to try a bubble scenario or whether, you know, that is run by the NCAA now. So they certainly could pull the plug on it. It's not nearly as profitable, obviously. Coach K said it best. The NCAA cannot afford to miss two straight NCAA tournaments. You guys probably know the general numbers. More when you add direct TV money, meaning what Turner and CBS pay to broadcast a single event in a single sport, you're talking about almost $1 billion with a B.
Yeah.
Almost $1 billion just to televise one event in one sport. That pays for almost everything else the NCAA does. When you boil it down, men's basketball revenue is directly or indirectly 90%+ of the NCAA's annual budget. Remember, because football money goes straight to the conferences, doesn't go through the NCAA. So they missed it last year. They took a massive financial hit, even though they had some insurance to cover some of their losses. Coach K said it best. They simply cannot afford to miss two in a row. They could afford to miss the NIT for a second year in a row. That's going to be more a matter of judgment than it is, you know, a desperate financial bottom line kind of situation.
Okay, you brought up something interesting there to me. CBS and Turner pay a lot of money for these games. Well, if you've been keeping up, a lot of companies aren't advertising on the Super Bowl this year. They're keeping that money and donating it to different charities or just saving the money because of, you know, financial woes because of COVID. And you gotta think if you're TBS and or Turner and CBS that you're hoping that a lot of these same companies aren't feeling that way about the NCAA tournament, not want to spend that money on that advertisement so they can make their money back on paying that $1 billion.
Yeah, it's a stressful time. I can tell you, just as somebody who's owned my own sports media companies, but also, you know, I work with The Athletic, which is an international sports media company. And I've worked for, you know, USA Today and The New York Times, and I've worked for smaller organizations as well. As a general rule, everybody in sports media is hurting right now. Because remember, there was five or six months with no games in any sport, yeah. Nothing to televise, no inventory, which means, guess what? You know, Turner and CBS aren't paying the same amount of money to the NCAA. The NCAA is not turning around and sending those checks to the conferences, which can't sign the same checks to the individual schools. You know, a company like Learfield IMG and other rights broadcasters, you know, weren't able to sign mega million-dollar checks that they would routinely sign in a normal year. There are a lot of people hurting. The good news in the March Madness context is because they have, I forget the length of the current deal, you can afford one missed tournament and one sort of damaged tournament where maybe you don't have quite as much advertising money over the length of the deal. The NCAA still wins, Turner still wins, CBS still wins, and you just have to ride out the bumpy part of the path. But it is a win. It's such a big win-win for everybody in most years that they're going to be able to get through this kind of shorter-term indigestion financially.
With the conference tournaments being brought up, another element that I thought of, you know, with some of the so-called Cinderellas, you know, whether it be a Winthrop this year. I know Winthrop's having a heck of a year. I believe they're still undefeated. And a lot of those conference tournaments finish up a week prior to the ACC and Big 12, et cetera. So they would have a jump start on the COVID situation potentially. So that's something else to think about.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see. I mean, you know, Loyola Chicago is a really good team in the Missouri Valley this year. Houston of the American Athletic Conference is a really good basketball team. San Diego State out in the Mountain West. I don't remember off the top of my head all their schedules, but just in turn, you know, which tournaments, which conference tournaments end early. But just as a general rule, I've noticed, for example, in the Virginia Tech success story that we talked about, Virginia has a lot of veteran players. We talked about the youth at places like Duke and Carolina. In an unorthodox season like this, I think experience has helped a lot and youth has hurt a lot. Now, experience always helps and youth usually hurts. But when you're not practicing as much, when you started late, when you missed a lot of games, you can't build chemistry the same way. And those teams that had a lot of returning players who already knew each other and might have more juniors and seniors tend to do better. And those that are trying to make a lot of new parts fit together, I think they're running out of time. I mean, have y'all ever seen Duke in such disarray in early February? I've been around not since Coach K's first year, but I go all the way back to the mid-1980s. I have never seen a Duke basketball team in disarray come the early days of February. And it is not an exaggeration to say Duke is in disarray. So how does that play out come March? I don't know. But it could make for the possibility of, you know, a more unusual Cinderella story from one of those teams I mentioned or somebody else, just because that experience and chemistry factor is going to be a magical advantage. And just the pure sheer talent factor, of course, it still matters. But I don't think it matters quite as much this year as it does in most years.
DG, let's talk a couple more topics. I appreciate your time tonight so much. One of the hot streaks that the Hurricanes are going on right now, 5-1. I know that, by the way, guys, if you did not know, we've got to get them to a game, DG. They've never been to a Hurricanes game. Let me tell you how good DG seats are. Okay, I've got the nosebleed seats. I look down one night. I see DG. He's so close to the glass that he could have a Hurricanes uniform on and skates, and you can put him on the third or fourth line, and nobody would know the difference. He's that close.
I'll tell you what, in all seriousness, Dave, friends like y'all in the broad sports media industry, I'm such a hockey guy from my upbringing in Philadelphia all the way through the present day. And I know Rod Brind'Amour, the Canes coach personally, and I know Tom Dundon, the Canes owner personally, and I've spent a lot of time in that building as a media member or as a fan. I have enabled a number of North Carolina citizens to see their first ever pro hockey game in my front row seats. And I'm telling you, you know, as we all get older, there aren't as many childlike moments. You can still have a wonderful, positive view of the world and of life. But as you get older, there just aren't as many little kid on Christmas morning looks on your face, right? It just doesn't happen as often. And I'm telling you, grown men, grown women, you know, grandparents, there's something about being that close to the action in a high-paced sport like hockey, that even if you are not necessarily a hockey lover, even if you don't even really know all the rules, it's been one of my great honors to sort of introduce people to the National Hockey League from that unique vantage point that you were describing, Dave. I still have those tickets. Once we get back to it, they're not very useful right now, obviously, no fans in the stands, but once we get back to some sense of normalcy, I would love to have – I have four seats, so there's four of us. That sounds like a good marriage waiting to happen.
Sounds good.
All right, Bubba, you hear that, don't you? no doubt about it. Hey, DG, one of the things running out of time, a few more minutes. Let's talk about the Super Bowl. I know that if this was a DG week, DG show, you'd be talking about the Super Bowl. What's your take on – there's so many storylines. I don't know where to start on the Super Bowl. Yeah. But the first – speaking of streaks, we're talking about Duke and North Carolina being unranked the first time in 61 years. How about the streak of a home team never hosting the Super Bowl? And, oh, by the way, it's now Tom Brady. 55 years. It takes 55 years for it to happen.
And this is the 55th straight Super Bowl for Tom Brady.
It's incredible. I'm so excited for fans because – given all the chaos that we've all experienced as just people who love sports, it's great to see a matchup where the best young quarterback goes against the great old quarterback. And I happen to be an Andy Reid fan as a Philadelphia Eagles fan from my childhood. He never won the Super Bowl with the Eagles, but he's one of those individuals that I not only respect as a coach, I respect him as a person. And the more you look into just his family circumstances and his positivity and the way he connects to professional football players in a way that reminds me of how most college coaches view their own job description, where you're a molder of young men, right? You're not only teaching them how to play football, you're teaching them about life. Andy Reid takes that approach even with these grown, married in many cases, multimillionaires in many cases, men who really rely on him in many cases for advice on major life decisions and non-football issues. So I'm a huge fan of Andy. I was happy to see him break through and finally get his first Super Bowl ring last year. And I would pick the Chiefs to win. I'm not a big gambling man. I do think they're slightly the better team. But how will it play out with the game right there in Tampa? I'm not sure. That is a crazy – I can't believe we waited more than half a century to finally see this happen. Long story short, most of the Glenn family – who do not live in the Philadelphia area where the majority of us still are. I'm one of the few who flew the nest, and I'm here with you guys, of course. But the only other chunk of Glenn's is in the Tampa area. And many of them have been there so long that they still kind of root for the Eagles, but they've embraced the Buccaneers. And they got real excited when that Tom Brady guy came to town. So now that they have the dreamy trip to the Super Bowl, and it happens in Brady's first year, in the year, of course, that the game was scheduled to be in Tampa, and here we have it a few days away, they are just walking on air down there. And they're thrilled because Tampa has had success in other sports with Lightning winning the Stanley Cup, et cetera. So I kind of have parts of my extended family jacked up about this game this weekend, but I'm just happy for NFL fans because sometimes the Super Bowl can be a dud, and I just don't think the dud factor is very high this year.
DJ, I asked George Koontz the other day, who obviously played with Brett Favre for several years, if Tom Brady was the greatest quarterback in NFL history, and he said yes.
Yeah.
Do you concur? I was always I knew Brady was great. But I was always saying it's a system. It's Belichick. And then he goes and does this in year one at Tampa Bay. I mean, you want to hate him. I mean, he's married to a beautiful model. He's got more money than Bill Gates. He wears UGG boots. You want to hate him, but then he goes to Tampa and does this in year one, and you go, damn it, he might be the GOAT.
Yeah, I that's my starting point. It is Tom Brady, and I have a lot of respect. I mean, we all know the other names in that conversation, Joe Montana and all the way down the list. But I think you bring up a great point because I think a lot of people worried, what does Belichick do without Brady, and what does Brady do without Belichick? And sure enough, the Patriots fell out of the playoff picture, and here's Brady, one of the last two standing. And it doesn't, to me, it doesn't take away from Belichick. I still think he's one of the greatest of all time, if not the greatest NFL coach in history. But I think they learned from each other. And I think one thing that they both embrace is preparation and attention to detail. And between the ears, Tom Brady is right up there with Peyton Manning and a handful of others as advanced as you can possibly be in the mental aspects of what I believe to be the most complicated position in any sport, right? I mean, catchers have a hard job in baseball and point guards have a tricky job in basketball. Nobody has a more complicated set of variables, pre-snap, post-snap, preparation, practice. Nobody has what quarterbacks have. And Brady is an absolute master of those things. And he's still sturdy enough and with a strong enough arm physically that even as he's less mobile, he was never exactly a gazelle, but even as he's less mobile and slower and doesn't get up quite as quickly and doesn't fight through half sacks quite as strongly, he's still amazing, right? And here he is. He's rejuvenated a program, a franchise that was waiting a long time for this kind of magic to happen.
No question, DG, before we let you go, I know that you had an interesting thing you told me before. Appreciate what you're doing now, but any hope that I was listening to SiriusXM today, I'm praying for one day to hear the DG show on ESPNU Radio, ACC Sports. I'm putting you on the spot, but I'm selfish, but I love that those channels. Any hope to hear you on terrestrial radio, satellite radio anytime soon?
Yeah, the best thing I can tell you is that I have told everybody that by the summer of 2021, so we're still, 5 months away from that, I want to have my new audio partner, whether that's a podcast, satellite, terrestrial, a combination. I've told everybody that I needed to handle some things outside of my radio existence. Actually, I'm still a guest every day somewhere in TV or radio land, and I love it. I'm teaching a sports media class at UNC Wilmington. I've gotten into, I practiced law for a long time, and I've gotten into some of that. I have some non-sports ventures that I'm involved in as well. So my plate is not full, but that's by design. I kind of like the first semi-break that I've had in probably 30 years. But with hopefully the pandemic, fingers crossed, with the pandemic allowing us to return to a semi-normal world by this summer, and with some of those sports media companies that, as I described earlier, have been really struggling financially, I'm confident that one or more of them will be able to build an economic model that's more compelling to me at this stage of my career. I'm old enough that I can be picky with whatever I do next, right? So I hope the answer is yes. I have that audio full-time outlet again starting this summer. I don't quite have clarity on that yet, but I am considering all the options that you threw out there, Dave. And in the meantime, I'm just having a blast doing all these other things that I've been involved with.
A lot of fun. And I know the guys, we're big fans and looking forward to where we decide to go. We'll follow you. And by the way, how can people follow you? Speaking of following you on Twitter and social media.
At David Glenn Show is my Twitter handle. We still have at ACC Sports as well. Now, the website I created way back in 1994 is still going strong at accsports.com. And The Athletic, another of my outlets, recently passed 1 million worldwide subscribers. So I'm really proud to be affiliated with those guys as well. They have an interesting idea for what the 21st century sports model is supposed to look like. So when they went past 1 million subscribers, that was pretty eye-opening. But those are the places to find me and my work, starting right there, as you said, Dave, on Twitter, at David Glenn Show.
Well, I know there's a big hockey game starting as the Hurricanes are at the Blackhawks. We'll let you watch that. Appreciate the visit, my friend, and can't wait to see what your next radio venture is going to be like.
Thanks, guys. Dave, Bubba, Kyle, great to be with you guys as always. Keep up the good work on your show.
Thanks, man. Have a good night. All right, David Glenn there, and looking forward to having him. And one of our other good friends, man, it seems like that we're always having him on, which is a great thing. And Bubba, I know you're excited as well, and Kyle, to have him back.
Yeah, the Pirates are hosting the fifth-ranked Houston Cougars tomorrow night at Minji's. And right now, to break down that matchup, I'm very excited to welcome back in Sam Raz. Sam, how are you?
Doing great, fellas. Thanks for having me back. Love to talk ball. Love to not think about football season anymore. I'm glad to just put that off the side and talk the sport that we've been quite good at here the last several years.
Clearly, it's been money well spent down there in Houston in football.
TBD, but yeah, early returns aren't the greatest.
Hey, Sam, I'm just going to tell you, I'm more excited about talking to you tonight than we are to watch the game tomorrow. A number 5 Houston coming into Greenville. You've got a great coach with Coach Sampson. I mean, you've got a great team. Who knows what's going to happen over the next month or two with the end of the regular season, of course, conference tournament and the national tournament, but how are you guys feeling down in Houston with your number 5 team in the country?
obviously very good. I think expectations were pretty high. I think things were, I wouldn't say tamped down a bit last year, because we're still talking about last year's Houston Cougar team being top 25 for the majority of the year and was the only surefire, not on the bubble NCAA tournament team in the AAC before the season got called off due to COVID. So obviously the bar set pretty high for that to kind of be your down year, but there were a lot of guys coming back from that team. Really, after senior day, the only guy that for sure wasn't going to be part of the program this year was Chris Harris, who did develop into a nice shot blocker by his senior year, but wasn't exactly a go-to guy offensively. It wasn't your A1 first guy you talk about when you talk about Houston Cougar basketball. And then you lost Nate Hinton to the draft. I think I was 50-50 when the season ended whether Nate would or wouldn't come back. He's actually on the Dallas Mavericks roster right now, one of the very best rebounding guards in the country last year. You lost him. Fabian White, who is the starting power forward the majority of the past 2 years, you lost him. So obviously right there, two key guys that you might have expected to be part of this year's team aren't back, but I still think with Quentin Grimes coming back, with Quentin Grimes starting to look more consistently like the Quentin Grimes we expected to get when he transferred from Kansas, Marcus Sasser starting to flash some things at the end of last season, and just generally the way that Samson teams get better year on year when you have a lot of the same guys in the program, and made a really smart addition in the transfer market in Reggie Chaney, the power forward who I think has kind of filled in a little bit of the cracks there at that position. And every single guy in the program that came back has gotten drastically better. So I think a lot of excitement. I think a couple of years ago, you know, this was a very, very good team, very, very exciting team, a 3-seed in the NCAA tournament. But I think we all kind of saw the future of this program, and you saw Samson's recruiting improving and thought, wow, you could have this same, you know, well-coached ball club, the same ferocious intensity, and have it with 4- and 5-star guys here in a couple of years. And I think that's come true, I think, beyond even the most optimistic expectation coming into this year. I think top 15, I think, was a lot of people's expectations. I think top 5 might have seemed like a push in preseason. Now here we sit, beginning of February, this is the number 5 team in the country in both polls. So I think expectations were high, but this team, I think, has still exceeded them.
Sam, what's the atmosphere down there like locally with the excitement for Houston basketball being in the top 5, being a legitimate, you know, somebody that is going to be in the conversation, you know, about, you know, can they win the whole thing? Can they make the Final Four and play for a national championship? I mean, that's something, you know, you guys have been good at basketball in recent years, but not to the point where you guys are considered going in, you know, as we sit here in February, you guys are considered by a lot of people to be a favorite for the Final Four.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement. I think Kelvin Sampson has played such a huge part as a salesman of the program, and I'm not gonna toot the horn of this fan base prior to the last 4 or 5 years, because I attended a lot of games at the Hoffline's Pavilion, and if you gave me long enough, I probably could have counted everyone in attendance for a good chunk of the games I went to from 2006 to 2015. But it's been kind of a gradual build. You slowly saw, even before the tournament teams, when Samson got to at least an NIT level, you started to see the fan base slowly buy back in. Again, I think this is somewhat by nature a Johnny-come-lately kind of fan base. So I think they did need to kind of prove it over the full season. Actually, this, ironically, the season where we didn't have a home court, the Fertitta Center renovations, I think, is when the fan base writ large. I think it was a win over Wichita State in early 2018. That's when everyone was like, okay, we're good at basketball again. It's not just the weirdos like me that follow every sport religiously that we're back in to the team. And I think you see it build. I have no doubt if we weren't living in the present time that it would be the hottest ticket in Houston right now. That's not simply because of what a disaster the pro teams are right now. And football's been pretty hit or miss the first 2 years of this coach. So, you know, I think those outside things might help a little bit. That might, you know, focus people even more on this basketball program. That's just the model of everything you'd want your college's basketball program to be. But yeah, I think a lot of excitement, a fan base that I think was starving for a winner. I think we saw just so many years. And I think Tom Pender's last year, we did go to the tournament. And I think he did a good job here considering, but just like it was a long, long, long desert. I think from the NCAA tournament win in 2018, I think it had been 32 years or 34 years before that, that U of H even won a tournament game, period. So that spanned my entire lifetime. I am no longer a young man. I am no longer college age. And until a few years ago, U of H hadn't even won a tournament or game in my lifetime. So it had been a long, long period of irrelevance for the program. But I think everyone, if they weren't bought in before this season, I think everyone's pretty bought in for the foreseeable future on Cougar basketball. Just excitement at the highest you could really envision.
Sam, I apologize if you've already touched on this. I had to step away for a moment, but you obviously lost a tremendous talent pretty early on in the season. I think four games in, if I am not mistaken, in Caleb Mills. But talk about Grimes and Sasser and everything they bring to the table. I was looking at the numbers today. They're averaging probably, what, roughly 45% of your scoring. And that's certainly not to say there aren't other legitimate scorers, because there are, but those guys are doing a lot, and they are shooting upper 30%, so close to 40 from three.
Yeah, the two of them have been very exciting. I think I don't have specific inside info as to why Caleb Mills chose to leave, but I think if you watched Houston this year, it's pretty easy to see that, you know, in between just bad injury luck and Caleb's side of things, that it was pretty clear by, I think it was early January, when he was physically right enough to start playing games again, that the Cougs had found something with Quentin Grimes and Marcus Sasser. And as great of a talent as Caleb Mills is, I'm as sure as I am of anything involving players no longer or just not in the Houston program, that Caleb Mills is going to kick ass and take names in the ACC for Florida State. It just, he wasn't able to get in the city, have the same kind of rhythm. He wasn't able to find the same level of shots and same level of minutes that I think he expected he was going to get with Q and Sasser playing so well. I think what makes those guys such intriguing players is how different they are. You know, Grimes came out of high school as a five-star guy, was the top player in Texas, basically has pick of any college in the country, and as improved as U of H has been the last few years, He was still in a different stratosphere of recruit than we'd ever get. He goes to Kansas, has, I think, by all accounts, a pretty disappointing year there. I don't think everything there was his fault per se, but definitely didn't hit the expectations you usually get from the kind of guys Kansas brings in. And he transfers here to Houston. Long story short, just entered the draft discussion, realized he didn't have a place back at Kansas, chose U of H over Texas A&M. And you saw early on, a sophomore year, there's still a lot of the bad habits from Kansas, a lot of the, I guess, lack of confidence. I mean, there were times when you saw him look like by far the best player on the court, and there were times where you didn't even notice Q had been out there the last 10 minutes. It was very inconsistent. And you started to see a little bit more of it by the end of last year. He pretty much single-handedly willed the Cougs to their season finale when it turned out, over Memphis, and it's pretty much carried over to this year. He's a guy, he's never going to be an efficiency stats kind of guy. I think shooting like mid-30s from three-point land maybe doesn't make the number of bunnies or easy shots that you'd think a guy of his talent should make, but absolutely ferocious defender, very smart player. Like he'll always find where the ball is on the defensive end. Great, great, great athlete. And you're starting to see why Quentin Grimes was a five-star recruit out of high school. An unbelievably gifted and smart ball player who's now playing with the confidence of a five-star, kind of rebuilding that last year with Samson. And Sasser really wasn't a guy on a lot of people's recruiting radar. I think that's what's really impressive, is that Samson and his staff keep finding guys that maybe the big programs in Texas still aren't giving serious consideration. Not the biggest guy, but has, I think, between his dad and his uncles, four or five college basketball players in his family, real tough guy, maybe not the gifted athlete, certainly not the as lengthy of a defender as Grimes, but a guy who's going to bring it on the defensive end, has a nice compact shot. Basically, a guy, once he gets to the AAC logo just past half court, is in shooting range. He's going to be, I almost guarantee, he's going to take a shot from at least 5 or 6 feet beyond the 3-point line against ECU on Wednesday. And that's not anything specific to ECU. That's just if he's remotely open and remotely near the 3-point line, Marcus Sasser is going to find his shot. And I think you're seeing him slash more. He looks a lot like, if you remember a guy from 2 years ago in this program, Corey Davis. Not the biggest guy, but a guy with a real nice
contact. What are you boys about to get locked up?
Somebody is having a little bit of fun here in Las Vegas. So you get to hear a little of the sights and sounds that I hear every day in America's Playground.
Okay, so is your end, Sam. Okay, I was wondering where those sirens were coming from.
Yep. So, long story short, Marcus Sasser reminds me a lot of Corey Davis from a couple of years ago. Maybe isn't the junkyard dog defender that Corey Davis was as a senior, but I think could be an even better athlete and could be a guy who, when it's all said and done, does even more offensively at the college level than Corey Davis. I think maybe to U of H's benefit, he's not built like a typical pro guy, so you might actually get the full 4 years out of a talented guard for once, because the Cougs have been losing a lot of guys to early entry just because they've had their profile raised by playing in this program.
Sam, one of the things I noticed about Kelvin Sampson's ball club, and East Carolina head coach Joe Dooley pointed it out earlier today, and today being Tuesday, as we were previewing, or he was addressing the media about tomorrow night's game, and that is just the Cougars' margin of victory. They're 10-1 in the American, and their average margin of victory is a little over 18 points.
Yeah, it's I think the last game that was really uncomfortably close in conference play for this team was the Wichita State game at home, which, to their credit, like, Wichita absolutely outplayed the Cougs for the first 20 minutes of that one. And it was, you know, I think as much as anything, just the Cougars missing open shots, that's going to happen. I think what really, I think, was impressive to me, what really, I think, showed that this team has kind of taken their play to another level, was the Cougs had a similarly poor first half against SMU this past Sunday. They didn't shoot the ball well. I think defended the Ponies pretty well, but just good looks, bad looks. They just really weren't going in from anyone in red and white. And you still saw the Cougars go into halftime with a lead. And despite not really shooting much better in the second half, put, you know, what's pretty clearly a top 30, top 40 offense in the country next 20 minutes, didn't even shoot it that much better, but were able to win not shooting the ball terribly well, because this is such a good defense and rebounding team. And I think that's really the difference between, you know, last year and this year, is that this team can win ugly a number of different ways, ugly, pretty. And I think that's why you've seen such a decisive recent run in AAC play.
Sam, taking a look at the big picture, I know you guys retweeted this on the Scott and Holman podcast, and that is, you know, seeing some of the projections, and the Cougs are, as of right now, they were projected. I'm not sure what outlet this was, but they were a number 2 seed.
He's got a telephone call right now, guys.
Yeah, as soon as I asked my question, I looked away, and then I looked down. I was wondering if we were having some technical issues, and then I saw Sam had a call.
Sorry, work emergency here, fellas.
No problem.
Well, Sam, handle your business, man.
No problem. We can let you run.
No, this will take less than a minute, fellas.
All right, by the way, guys, we got a really exciting announcement. Bubba, do you want to save it to later or do it right now while we have a break with Sam?
We can save it.
Okay.
Why don't we go ahead and promote our upcoming content?
That's what I was going to do. Okay, so Thursday night, Bubba, very excited. We got a big show, don't we?
Yeah, sorry. I thought you were going to take it. I muted myself.
Oh, sorry. I was pitching to you. But Thursday night, very excited. We'll have Mikey M of the NFL Network. He's going to join us to talk about Super Bowl 55. And Bubba, we're very excited to have Biscuit on, right?
Yeah, very excited to have former East Carolina defensive tackle Devon Claybrooks and Biscuit, as Dave said, played for the Tampa Bay Bucks when they won their first and only Super Bowl title back in the early 2000s. I want to say it was the 2001 season, you know, where the Super Bowl was played in January or February of 2002 under John Gruden when they took down the Oakland Raiders out in San Diego. But Biscuit will join us and talk about back then, you know, nearly 20 years ago, what it was like to play in a Super Bowl with all the festivities. And I heard C.J. Wilson, he played in a Super Bowl right around 2010, and he was with the Green Bay Packers. And he said that 2 weeks absolutely wears you out.
No question about it. So that's going to be coming up on Thursday night. We'll have that. That's our next show. And we'll have that. Sam, we got you back now, and you're multitasking. You're the man. You are the man.
It's kind of the life we have to live in it now, working from home. So I wish it was the first time. I certainly hope it's the last time for a while that the two things kind of intersected with each other in a time I didn't expect or hope for. But I am back with y'all and ready to talk some more Cougar basketball. Bubba, what was your question?
I think you had already addressed the question regarding the margin of victory. I'm trying to remember if I'd ask you anything else after that. Oh yes, the big picture. You guys had retweeted the projections, and I saw whatever outlet it was that had put out the field of 68 projections, and you guys were a number two seed.
Yeah, I think it was Andy Katz and his thing he does for the NCAA's official website. And yeah, it's pretty unbelievable to be realistically on the two line. I think this fan base went into the season obviously knowing that barring catastrophe that this would be an NCAA tournament team. even though we lost the preseason AAC Player of the Year midseason unexpectedly, this is still NCAA tournament team. But yeah, I think being in that high seat, it's very exciting. Obviously wish we weren't living in the reality where I couldn't go see this team, because I went a couple tournaments ago to Tulsa and Kansas City, and it was a blast. There's nothing like going to the NCAA tournament. Even the games that didn't involve U of H, my co-host Dustin and I, we went and caught all four games that day. I think it was Texas Tech Buffalo, Arizona State and someone else, and then us and Georgia State. It's a blast. There's nothing like it in the country. So unfortunate that can't go see it this year, but yeah, it's going to be a team. Even if something approaching the worst case scenario, you know, comes about, the team loses a couple of games, you know, God forbid Grimes or Sasser sees extended time hurt and, or not playing for whatever reason, I still think, this is probably, I think, at worst, we're talking a four or a five seed. I think with a lot of the toughest games on paper in conference play, which isn't to disrespect that every game is a potential loss, isn't to disrespect Wichita State at Wichita, which is going to be fairly difficult. And if or when we have a conference tournament, who the Cougs see there, I think if we see SMU a third time, as much as U of H proved superior the first two times, it's really tough to be a team three times. I do think we're realistically talking about a two or three seed when it's all said and done come mid-March.
And that's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. So football-wise, have you heard anything on a spring game? How are things there? Because you guys in Texas seems to be more realistic because of obviously with the less restrictions. North Carolina being the state I'm talking about, I don't know that we're going to be able to have a spring game. We'll see.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you mean a spring game for the fans, Dave?
Yeah. I'm sorry, with attendance for the fans. Not that we're going to not have spring practice. I'm saying for attendance for the fans.
Okay. I was about to say, because the FCS schools in state are about to play.
No. I was just talking about having fans there, which really a whole other show, as they say, we need to improve our spring game as far as an event that it used to be. But as far as I'm just thinking it's going to be where no fans are going to be there, and then we'll talk about it, but it's not going to have the same feel as if we were there.
Yeah, I think just based on although it's kind of twofold. I think part of me, like we did have 20% capacity at games at TDECU, 25, I think actually at TDECU Stadium this year. So from that perspective, I would think we would have fans at some point for a spring game. Although I do remember from 2019, Holgorsen's first year here, and maybe that was just, it was the first year and they were installing stuff and they didn't want to have that many eyes on anything they did practice wise, but the current staff didn't seem too keen to make much of the spring game. I think the spring game, the last time we're in a non-COVID year, 2019, it was a pretty informal event from what people who actually went to the thing told me. Like the score wasn't kept in a way that fans could really keep up with. It felt more like a scrimmage practice than an actual spring game. I've been to spring games where some kind of score was kept and you had officials and jerseys and actual things to engage the fans. So from that perspective, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a pretty low key affair this year. I do think it's a good thing for fans, although, and you guys could probably sympathize with this because it's from a southern part of the country. Every single spring game I went to in 15, 16 years at this point of being a real dedicated U of H fan and adult, every single one of them was just about the most hottest and miserable affair I went to. Just like 95 degrees.
Eastern North Carolina, man. April.
So yeah, so maybe you guys got a little lucky.
April's pretty nice in Eastern North Carolina. That's not bad at all.
It is, I would say, about half the time it's beautiful in Houston and half the time it's 95 degrees out with 90% humidity. So it's definitely a roll.
September.
It's a roll of the dice. That's the only downside of it from a Houston fan perspective. But yeah, like I think I'm with you guys. I'm generally pro the spring game is something. Just give your fans a chance to see the football team and have a day out in the spring. Maybe, you know, scratch a little bit of the itch from not having football for 4 or 5 months at that point.
So are fans still a little restless with Dana, with Coach Holgorsen, or are they still giving him a pass?
I would say it's 50-50 at this point. If you had asked me this a year ago, I would say no. I think anyone reasonable is very much in the, we're not counting 2019 against him. And I think there's probably, I would say, 40% of the fan base is like, this guy better show me something or he's in trouble. I think 60% of the fan base is some mix of this guy better show me something and this guy hasn't really had a season we could fairly judge him on yet. And I think I'm equal parts. This guy needs to show something soon. And this guy has had two seasons that's kind of hard to judge him on because UH didn't even get a game in this year until early October. We had 5 games canceled in the month of September. We even added a game for a week where our opponent had canceled on us because Memphis had their own COVID issues in early September. And
one of you guys just get a boner? What the hell was that?
Yeah, my ringtone. Sorry, I thought it was off.
Oh, man. Where was I? I'm just gonna start the whole thought over.
Okay, go for it. Yeah, it's all good.
If you'll remember, this team wasn't able to get any games in until early October. You had 5 games actually get canceled in the month of September. Washington State canceled their non-conference games. Rice canceled their non-conference games. Memphis and UNT both had COVID issues. And the week that the Memphis game was supposed to happen, U of H thought they'd pulled off a scheduling miracle and got Baylor, who's just about two and a half hours north of Houston, to agree to a game last year and a game in the future. And about 24 hours before kickoff, Baylor canceled it due to COVID issues in their program. So as much as any team had a weird year and got more than 4 or 5 games in this year, you could say Houston had a really weird year and yet still somehow got 7 or 8 games in. You had a month-long break after the USF game and before the Memphis game because of Houston's COVID issues and also Tulsa's COVID issues. But I think there's some red meat to the criticism that for a guy who came in with a pretty sterling offensive pedigree, certainly a reputation as one of the more innovative spread binds in the sport, that the Cougar offense didn't look very imaginative, didn't seem to be putting guys in the right position. It kind of felt a little bit at times like square pegs and round holes. You know, are you giving Clayton Tune the best chance to win, or are you calling a bunch of slow developing pass plays with a pretty iffy offensive line? You know, I think questions about that, I think a little bit less legitimate questions about the recruiting, which I think has actually seen a pretty nice boost in this current class. And UH has actually done some good things in the portal, but the schedule's a lot more manageable in conference play. You're missing Cincinnati, you're missing UCF. The schedule's going to be a lot more manageable in non-conference. You're no longer going to get either a really long road trip or a team like BYU or Oklahoma that's going to hand you a pretty difficult game. But with that easier schedule comes real expectations. And I feel even though COVID has put us in a position that, you know, you're getting 4 years of Dana Holgorsen, like it or lump it, barring easy NCAA violation kind of things that you can break a contract for, you're getting 4 years of him because the money's not going to be there to buy him out. But he'd be going in, if he's going to go into year four with good vibes, go into year four with fan support behind him, he's going to have to win at least 9 games this year. Since he's a brutal test this year, I don't think it's a championship or bust situation. I don't think anyone should have in this league championship or bust expectations on them, except for Cincy. But it's going to be a year where the team has to look significantly better than 2019 and 2020, even with all the things around 2019 or 2020, or I think you're going to have a hard time selling this fan base on him, even though everyone's pretty much accepted he's going to probably have to get a year four regardless.
And the fact that he's making, what is it, guys, $4 million a year. I mean, that's the thing, is that if you're the Yankees and you're paying A-Rod a lot of money, you expect to win games. You expect him to help you win games. If you're getting $4 million in America, you better win some games, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He took a salary cut along with Samson at the outset of the COVID thing. But I mean, we're still talking about the highest paid coach in the G5, even with Fickell at Cincinnati getting a pretty nice and obviously well-deserved pay bump. I guess the good news at the end of the day is it's not university money being thrown at this coach. It's majority private money. It's probably the last big money we were getting from Tillman Fertitta, who obviously isn't really in a position anymore to contribute the way he did, as the owner of the Rockets now, as someone who's trying to deal with his own hospitality empire in the current climate. So this was probably the last big hurrah there, and why I said in the prior question that, you know, you're getting a fourth year of this guy because the money ain't there to end this thing early like the program did previously with Tony Levine and Major Applewhite.
Good question. Well, Sam, how can people follow your work? We appreciate it. Again, I enjoyed talking to you more than I think the game is going to – I don't think the game is going to be exciting. I hope it is. But, Houston's one of the – I definitely think they're going to the Final Four in Indianapolis. We'll see how that plays out. But how can people follow your work? And you have a great podcast to tell everybody about.
Thanks, Dave. You can follow us. I'd say the social media platform at this point we are most – active on his Twitter. It's at SHPAWD cast. We talk obviously U of H primarily, but we talk a lot of AAC. Talked at least 2 times this year about y'all's awesome freshman running back whose name I have I'm having an absolute brain fart.
Rajay Harris.
Rajay Harris. I was going to say Rajay Davis, but no, Rajay Davis was a baseball player from 10 years ago. So SHPAWD cast on Twitter. We're the Scott and the Holman podcast. You can find us on anywhere that has podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. I think Google has a podcast thing now. Anywhere that you can get podcasts, we're there. We're talking all things Cougs. We're actually going to be within, I would say, the next hour from now recording tonight's episode where we talk a fair amount about Cougs, ECU, and everything going on in the world of Cougar sports right now.
See if you can get the word boner in on your podcast.
We can get creative. We can make it happen.
All right.
All right. Sam, enjoy the visit, man. Enjoyed it, and good luck tonight on the cast, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Thank you so much for having me, fellas. I really appreciate it.
No doubt. Sam Raz, enjoy having him always, and guys, great show, and I want to remind fans, too, I just saw, guys, right before the show, I got an update that my order is on the way from pgxgloves.com. How about that, Kyle? My T-shirts are on the way.
Did you put in that code ECU and save yourself 25%?
I did not, because they're a sponsor, so I paid the whole amount for cause. And
if you put that code in at pgxclubs.com and you put that code in ECU, you'll save 25%.
That's right. So I let the other fans do that. And promo code ECU, and all caps, by the way, make sure it's capital letters. You have to do that in the promo code, and you get the 25% off discount. We already have Sports Objective fans that are doing that. Guys, they have so many great things, and one of the great things I'm happy about, it's on the screen now, but if you're listening, the 23 Jungle Tales, I got that T-shirt. I got my two kids, if you're watching, obviously, but if you're not, if you're listening, PGX Gloves has a really cool lion as their logo. Both of my kids wanted that shirt. I thought they'd want the 23 Jungle Tales shirts, but they wanted the lion shirts, and that's what they love. So, hey, Bubba, they've got it all, don't they? I mean, anything you want.
Yeah, custom gloves, some, you know, personalizations on those gloves, batting gloves. And then you also you have football gloves, golf gloves, swag, like you mentioned, as far as hats. He sent myself a couple of hats. Riley's been wearing one, and then I gave my dad the other because it would not fit my big head. I'm going to have to get a customized hat there as far as the hat that I'm ordering, though. But look forward to getting that in the mail here in the next few weeks, and sporting the PGX Gloves lid here in North Carolina. And, you know, really looking forward to having Kaz on the show here soon.
Yeah, it seems but, like everybody, and I don't know if this happens the case, Bubba, but it seems like everybody's going snapback these days.
It was a Richardson brand, and it is a snapback. And I told Kaz, I said I really appreciate it. Yeah. And but I'm guessing before you sent it, just based on my experience, mm-hmm. he said I really think it will fit. And I said, no. I said I bet it doesn't. I was able to get it on, but it's totally uncomfortable to wear just because snapbacks of the size of my melon.
If you got a big head, snapbacks are brutal. I literally have one snapback hat that halfway fits me. Otherwise, it just never works. It doesn't matter what brand it is. You can put it on that last hole, Bubba, but you can't wear a snap hat, a snapback, right, just on that last hole. You look like a complete idiot. So yeah, if you can't go at least two holes, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
No, and that's what my dad tried to get me to do, Kyle. And I don't know what that says about him, but.
Hey, yeah. When is Gary coming on? We need to get Gary Rosenbaum on.
I don't know. I'll see if I can make it happen, Dave. But as far as 23 Jungle Tales, we do have a couple headed your way over the next three or four days. On Thursday afternoon, we'll be catching up with Butch Davis. No, not that Butch Davis, but the Butch Davis that played baseball for the Pirates and back in the 70s and early 80s, perhaps. But he played in the MLB for Texas and then some other organizations, I want to say. And then he's had a lengthy coaching career and managing career in professional baseball. So we'll catch up with Butch Davis to talk about his time with East Carolina baseball. And then we'll also talk to Tim Langdon, who played for Coach O and was a teammate of Calvin Brown's in the early 90s.
That sounds really awesome. And 23 channels.
Dave, don't mean to step on you there, but what's the big surprise? You guys indicated there was a big surprise.
Well, we wanted to talk to you off the air before, I guess, that we can break that news. But it's about the podcast and not East Carolina news. So we can save that for you want to do that on Thursday night, Bubba?
Sounds good.
All right, we'll break that news on Thursday night. So it's kind of like a cliffhanger, like Dallas or one of those old
Thursdays.
It's a Thursday surprise to me. I didn't know about the surprise.
We haven't had a chance. I forgot that we hadn't had a chance to talk to you. So
we didn't want you to spoil it, Kyle.
Well.
Okay. Yeah, no doubt.
No. Well, there's absolutely no chance because I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. So.
A non-disclosure. We'll make you sign a non-disclosure until Thursday night. All right, guys. Do you have anything before we go?
No, not much. Just to see what the surprise is. Can't wait to get off the air.
All right. Well, you guys, it's a great – in our business, we call it a tease. It's the ultimate tease. as you have to be listening on Thursday night. Appointment listening, as we like to say. And you'll find out our breaking news. Very excited about it on the show. And until next time, I want to thank David Glenn and Sam Raz, our great guests. Thanks to Kyle Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum. You've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates! Up and lean side to side, set the tone with your pirate pride. Put your crossbones up for your pirates. Take no business home out the water. Put your crossbones up and lean side to side, set the tone with your pirate pride. Put your crossbones up if you're a pirate. Let the other team know we got things around it.